We've been tricked. We've been bamboozled. We've been led astray.
It is time for African Americans to talk. It is time for us to stop allowing other folks to define our agenda and our priorities.
In 1913 and 1914, Casement continued to campaign for a united and free Ireland.
Ireland has no blood to give to any land, to any cause but that of Ireland.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Nigeria considers jailing queer supporters, right-wing Republican false promises to African Americans are revealed, and a gay Irish patriot falls from human rights champion to embarrassing traitor. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 15, 2006. The Nigerian government has already proposed what could be the world's most draconian anti-lesbi-gay legislation, but it was made even worse this week during a first reading in the country's Senate. The measure outlaws gay and lesbian marriage and makes advocacy for GLBT equality a crime, but it's been expanded to punish anyone who supports or celebrates same-gender unions. According to the Vanguard newspaper, the bill imposes 5-year prison terms for violations of the proposed law, including jail time for those who witness, celebrate with, or support couples involved in a homosexual relationship. One section of the bill states that, for the avoidance of doubt, only marriage entered into between a man and a woman under the Marriage Act or under Islamic and customary laws are valid and recognized in Nigeria. Under the measure, Nigeria would also deny recognition of marriage licenses legally issued to same-gender couples in other countries. The clear intent of the bill is to make all favorable public discourse on homosexuality illegal there.
But the Vatican's grip on Italian politics might be on the wane. The center-left coalition led by Romano Prodi, who promised to introduce a civil partnership law for same-gender couples if elected, appears to have won a very narrow victory in this week's national elections. The current government of conservative Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has close ties to the Vatican, and critics charge Pope Benedict XVI with meddling in civil politics in the weeks leading up to the election, with speeches repeatedly condemning abortion and same-gender unions. Those were big social issues with voters, leading several thousand pro-queer and pro-choice Italians to demonstrate in the streets during the campaign. Berlusconi is refusing to concede defeat, however, and is challenging the close vote, which could delay issuance of the final results for several weeks. The International Lesbian and Gay Association, or ILGA, reported that 5 lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender candidates were also elected to the Italian parliament, including Vladimir Luxuria, who could be Europe's first transsexual elected official. ILGA also believes that a Prodi-led government would improve Italy's anti-discrimination legislation and expand its hate crime laws to include sexual orientation and gender identity.
A Serbian immigrant is being allowed to stay in Britain because deporting her would breach her right to a family life with another woman, according to a report this week in the London Telegraph. The Court of Appeal ruled that 54-year-old Emine Krasniqi can remain in the country while the refugee status of her 24-year-old partner, Albana Lamaj, is decided. Krasniqi, an Albanian from Serbia, and Lamaj from Kosovo fled to Britain separately after each was raped by Serb troops. They now live together in Birmingham, raising Lamaj's child in what Lord Justice Sedley described as a stable and committed family. Adjudicator V.A. Osborne heard evidence from both women and found that although there was a sexual component to their relationship, it was not the central force. She said she was satisfied that their relationship is an exclusive and enduring one. Lord Justice Sedley, along with the Court of Appeal's Lady Justice Arden and Lord Justice Chadwick, said it was now conceded that neither woman would be able to live with the other, either in Serbia or in Kosovo.
And bowing to pressure from members of parliament and international human rights groups, Dutch Immigration Minister Rita Verdonk has agreed to extend her stay of a controversial plan to deport Iranians who are lesbian, gay, or Christian, according to a report by Expatica News. Lawmakers from parties aligned with Verdonk's own party in the coalition government indicated this week that they would join the main opposition Labour Party in fighting Verdonk's plan to send such refugees back to Iran. Verdonk has claimed that conditions in Iran are safe enough for lesbian gay people if they keep a low profile, even though homosexual sex is punishable by death there. But deporting them would result in certain torture, and the threat of death is very real, according to Scott Long, director of Human Rights Watch's Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Rights Program. Verdonk said the moratorium would remain in force until the Dutch Foreign Ministry can complete an investigation into conditions in Iran for gays and lesbians and converts to Christianity. According to Expatica, that inquiry is likely to last until August or September.
Reports are just coming in from Poland about 5 days of sleep-ins by protesters at the Warsaw gay club La Madame in late March as police attempted to close it down. At times, more than 200 demonstrators took part. In the early morning hours of March 31st, however, when only about 50 people were inside the building, police conducted another raid and shut it down. Activists told veteran journalist Doug Ireland that police beat some of the club's defenders, who had chained themselves to pipes and railings or went limp as they were hauled away. Ireland reported that others regrouped across the street and chanted, "It's not over, it's just the beginning." The city owns the building, and officials said the club had to be shut down because the space was needed for another unspecified use. But the Polish Green Party, whose headquarters were at La Madame, said the club was closed because the right-wing government in Poland wanted to shut down this meeting point for civil society, where artists, political activists, homosexuals, feminists, and globalization critics met.
But about 400 people marched in the third Pride Parade in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, on March 31st. Parties and other events continued through the weekend. According to a report by the German wire service Deutsche Press Agentur, the parade was organized by the Salt Lounge Bar and sponsored by Population Services International, Family Health International, and the Women's Network for Unity.
There was both good news and bad news for equality activists in three U.S. states this week. In Kentucky, on the same day that he declared Diversity Day in the state, Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher issued an executive order removing sexual orientation from categories protected from discrimination in state employment. The policy bans bias based on race, color, national origin, sex, age, religion, veteran status, and disability. Sexual orientation had been added in 2003 by the state's outgoing Democratic governor. Fletcher's office told reporters that the governor believed removing sexual orientation was necessary to avoid conflicts with federal anti-discrimination workplace laws, which don't include protections based on sexual orientation. However, critics charged Fletcher with pandering to the religious right as he gears up for a re-election bid.
But an Indiana appeals court ruled this week in favor of allowing same-gender couples to jointly adopt children. Adoptions by unmarried couples in the state were previously approved only if the child was the natural offspring of one partner or had already been adopted by one of them. The victorious lesbian couple, who are in their mid-30s and have been together for more than 11 years, adopted an infant girl in April 2005, but a county judge had invalidated the adoption. Patricia Logue, senior counsel for Lambda Legal, which represented the couple, described them as elated, telling reporters that they are hoping the state drops the case so they can get on with their lives.
And the California Supreme Court this week again refused to hear an appeal challenging the state's domestic partner laws. Opponents had appealed a January ruling from the 3rd District Court of Appeal in Sacramento, charging that California's laws make domestic partners equivalent to spouses and therefore violate the voter-approved ban on same-gender marriage, Proposition 22, which states in its entirety, "Only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California." According to Kate Kendall of the National Center for Lesbian Rights and co-counsel in the case, "Domestic partnership is not marriage, and the court wisely denied review of misguided and underhanded attempts to distort the language of Proposition 22 and strike down validly enacted legislation that protects lesbian and gay people and their families." "These families will never be truly safe, however," noted Jeffrey Kors of the advocacy group Equality California, "until full marriage equality is achieved."
And finally, the Lyndale United Church of Christ in Minneapolis, Minnesota, decided this week to stop performing civil marriages for heterosexuals because they're denied to gay and lesbian couples. The 1.3 million member United Church of Christ endorsed a resolution in support of same-gender marriage during its national meeting last year. Lyndale's Reverend Don Portwood says he'll officiate at religious ceremonies for both opposite and same-gender couples, but that, "I will no longer sign marriage licenses as an agent of the state of Minnesota until the state of Minnesota recognizes the loving commitment of all couples." The congregation's April 9th vote mirrors similar actions in a handful of churches across the country, including some in the Unitarian Universalist Church. And as we reported last week, Logo, the MTV network's owned cable channel specifically targeting the U.S. GLBT market, has refused to air a welcoming TV spot by the United Church of Christ that specifically includes gays and lesbians, claiming that it disparages other religions. This week, two rivals, Here TV and the Q Television Network, announced that they'd be running the spot at no charge. As the Christian world's Easter observances conclude around the globe, we're reminded of everything Jesus himself had to say about homosexuality.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending April 15, 2006. Written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
The saga of early 20th century gay Irish patriot Sir Roger Casement continues with the dawn of the Great War and the ill-fated Easter Uprising later in the program. In a new report called False Promises, How the Right Deploys Homophobia to Win Support from African Americans, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute charges that the Republican Party's efforts to win black votes are fundamentally disingenuous. Task Force policy analyst Nicholas Ray explains how the data from such sources as the NAACP and the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights was used to develop the report's conclusions.
To determine what any party ought to be addressing if it wants to be the political home of African Americans, we analyzed African American polls conducted by Black America's Political Action Committee and the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. And what we find is that the four priorities most often identified as important by poll respondents were the economy and jobs, health care and prescription drug coverage, education, and social security. Conversely, fewer than 1% of African Americans said that morals or any moral crisis was the most important issue facing America. Indeed, 47% of African Americans support same-sex marriage or civil unions. We find that conservatives score poorly on measures of attention to the real concerns of African Americans. And these conservative politicians have been joined by allies from the evangelical Christian right. For example, Tony Perkins leads the Anti-Gay Behemoth Family Research Council, a group that has been heavily involved in outreach efforts to religious communities, especially via African American churches and ministers. But Perkins' personal record on issues of concern to the African American community is dubious at best. In contrast, there are a great many African American leaders who have spoken eloquently on behalf of full equality for gay and lesbian Americans. Representative John Lewis of Georgia, a pioneer of the civil rights movement, has remarked, "I've heard the reasons for opposing civil marriage for same-sex couples. Cut through the distractions, and they stink of the same fear, hatred, and intolerance I have known in racism and bigotry." And as recently as February of this year, Joseph Lowery, co-founder with Martin Luther King Jr. of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, cautioned African American Christians against viewing civil rights as solely an African American issue, saying, "Don't ever let the Constitution be used to take away rights. You can't say you're for equal rights and then make an exception."
There is a need for African Americans for us to gather our forces now in the face of the demonization of any part of our community. And that certainly includes same-gender-loving African Americans.
The outspoken Reverend Dr. Yvette Flounder is presiding bishop of Refuge Ministries, a San Francisco inner-city-based church founded in the Baptist, Methodist, and Pentecostal traditions. She issued a clarion call for African American communities to begin a discourse about sexuality.
We are injuring our own people in bed with the religious right and in many ways with folks whose agenda does not include us. We are injuring our own people, those who have historically given so much to our community and our churches, and their mothers and fathers and families are so wounded by this rhetoric. When we experience the use of the Bible to defend hatred, we must remember that we were once held in slavery and denied the right to marry interracially by narrow interpretations of Scripture. I am calling on the laity, the mothers, the fathers, and the community to speak out and advocate for an African-American family meeting. We need each other. None of us are expendable. And I, for one, will not allow this racist political power grab to separate me from my community. This is my community, not Karl Rove's community, not George Bush's community, my community. This is my DNA. And the fight for civil rights cannot belong to any one race or community. But it is because we have struggled that we as African Americans must help others who are in the struggle for the inalienable rights to justice and the pursuit of happiness. Lou Sheldon, James Dobson, and the like have no record of concern for the civil rights of African Americans until our struggle could be used for their purposes. They are abusing the African American civil rights struggle. They fail to realize that some of us are both same gender loving and African American simultaneously. I hate to hear Martin Luther King and Coretta King's names even come out of the mouths of people who fought against what they believed and now use them as a wedge. It is time for African Americans to talk. It is time for us to stop allowing other folk to define our agenda and our priorities and to use our weaknesses. I am not afraid of that conversation, and I am not afraid of my people.
It certainly should be a wake-up call to all African-American activists for social justice, racial justice, and change in this country.
The kind of research the task force has done is long overdue, as far as National Black Justice Coalition Executive Director Alexander Robinson is concerned.
The religious conservatives and Republicans that have mounted this campaign, I am reminded of words from a film that we've been tricked, we've been bamboozled, we've been led astray by a group of individuals who have never had the well-being and the advancement of the black community at heart. I pray will be an opportunity for us to talk to our allies, African-American ministers, African-American elected officials, individuals in the media, to really come together and work, gay, straight, bisexual, same gender loving African-Americans, along with our heterosexual counterparts and allies in every community, to combat the kind of bigotry, the kind of divisive politics that has been at play, and really create a world in which, and a country in which, it is safe for all individuals, regardless of their race, sexual orientation, sexual identity. It is safe for us to participate openly and honestly in all of the sectors of our lives and in our families.
That was Alexander Robinson of the National Black Justice Coalition. To find more online about the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute report, False Promises, log on to thetaskforce.org. Information about Refuge Ministries can be found at sfrefuge.org, and the National Black Justice Coalition is at nbjcoalition.org.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
In the first two parts of our four-part dramatized biography of early 20th century gay humanitarian and controversial Irish patriot Sir Roger Casement, we've heard about his dual roots in Irish Catholic and Protestant households and his exceedingly charming and adventurous nature. As an agent for the British Foreign Office, Casement investigated and reported on the brutality of King Leopold's rubber trading operation in what was then the Belgian Congo, all the while detailing his sexual escapades in diaries that would ultimately come back to haunt him. After receiving considerable public accolades for the reforms his work forced in Africa, he was next sent to South America, where he encountered Amazon rubber traders and their equally horrific treatment of forced native laborers. His reports to the Foreign Office were so strong that just the threat of their publication moved the Peruvian government to institute changes. Casement was knighted for his efforts, and while he accepted the honor, he felt a traitor to Ireland. He devoted more and more of his energies to the Home Rule movement, speaking out for a unified and independent Ireland. Producer Hugh Young and narrator Barry Empson now continue the story.
The German ships were lying there with rifles in galore. Up came a British ship and spoke, no Germans reached the shore.
We present The Broken Heart of Ireland, The Life and Death of Sir Roger Casement, Part 3, Ourselves Alone.
No German foot shall e'er pollute a lonely banner's strand.
In 1913 and 1914, Casement continued to campaign for a united and free Ireland. He was also secretly arranging for arms supplies to the south, including from Germany. He sailed to America to promote the cause among the Irish there. But then Britain went to war with Germany. Home rule was delayed, and Casement increasingly felt that Ireland should not support Germany, but at least not support England against Germany. And he tried to enlist German support for nationalist movements, not only in Ireland, but also India and Egypt. The military attaché in Washington, Franz von Papen, was interested, and the idea arose of forming an Irish Legion from Irish prisoners in Germany. Casement decided to sail for Germany, financed by the Irish-American Clan na Gael. He might have returned to Ireland, but he had rather burnt his bridges in a signed letter to the Irish Independent newspaper.
Ireland has no blood to give to any land, to any cause but that of Ireland. No Irishman can join the Allied millions now attacking Germany in a war that, at best, concerns Ireland not at all.
In New York, Casement had been accosted by a young Norwegian sailor, Adler Christiansen. Christiansen boasted he could speak German, and Casement decided to take him to Germany with him, by way of Norway, as interpreter, agent, and playmate. Christiansen played an elaborate double game with Casement. He told him that he'd pretended to plot against his life with a British minister to Germany in Norway, and perhaps he really had done so. He certainly kept the British legation informed about Casement's identity, views, destination, and a German cipher he held, all for a price, and he gave them their first hint of his master's sexuality. Christiansen was 24, 6 feet tall, strongly made, clean-shaven, fair hair, blue or grey eyes, with a gap between his front teeth. This description is from the British minister, who added, has a fleshy, dissipated appearance, though that may be homophobic hindsight. Casement noted,
I am glad I brought him indeed. He is a treasure.
In Germany, Casement did secure a statement that Germany wouldn't invade Ireland except as an army of liberation. Only about 50 men were recruited for the Irish Brigade, and Irish patriots in America tried unsuccessfully to dissuade Casement from continuing. In Ireland, a rising was planned for Easter 1916, and the Germans agreed to send 20,000 rifles and ammunition. Not nearly enough, Casement thought, and with none of the German officers that the leaders of the revolt were expecting. He felt he must warn them not to proceed, or if he failed, to die with them. He sailed ahead of the arms ship in a submarine. It broke down, or seemed to, and they had to go back. The Germans didn't want Casement to arrive before the arms. The voyage, when it finally happened, was horrible. The sub went on the surface, and Casement was badly seasick. When they arrived, there was no sign of the arms ship, nor anyone on shore to meet them. Plans had been changed too late for the U-boat captain to be told. All he could do was put Casement and two others ashore in a tiny dinghy and sail away before dawn. The dinghy overturned, then grounded on a sandbank. By the time they reached the shore, Banner Strand near Tralee, Casement was exhausted and lay in the water unconscious. He was ecstatic, though, home in his beloved Ireland. While the others went for help, Casement was found by a passing policeman. The dinghy, which the others had failed to sink, gave him away, and he was taken into custody. A German train ticket, a diary, though not one recording anything sexual, and a code were found in his clothing. Before they found out who he was, he asked a priest to send a warning to call off the rising. As it happened, the message didn't get through, but the Easter morning parade of volunteers was called off anyway. Hearing of this, the English were taken off guard, and English troops were given time off to go to the races. So when the rising did begin on Easter Monday, it was far more successful than it would otherwise have been. 2,000 rebels held out for almost a week, in Dublin at any rate. Germany and Casement were blamed. Its echoes reverberate over Ireland today. In 1918, Sinn Féin, adopting many of Casement's ideas, swept to power, set up their own administration, and in 1921 signed a treaty with Britain granting self-government in the south. But the leaders of the Easter Rising were court-martialed and shot within a few days. Casement was sneaked into England and subjected to a show trial, a travesty of justice. One reason was that no reputable barrister was willing to defend a traitor in wartime. The other was Casement's diaries. Casement's supporters included the Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and pioneer socialists Sidney and Beatrice Webb. Shaw wanted to write a speech for Casement, arguing that though the facts were proven, they didn't amount to treason because he was Irish, not English. But the only barrister willing to take the case, an Irishman, Alexander Sullivan, who had the eyebrows and jowls of an unusually sad bloodhound, wanted to take another line, a quibble in the definition of treason which dated from the reign of Edward III. He had his own fish to fry. A legal argument would improve his chances of admission to the English bar. It was doomed, and Sullivan had to swing his argument around to Shaw's, but he did it so badly that he broke down. He'd begun to remind the court of other Irish patriots and came close to implicating the prosecutor, Attorney General F. E. Smith, in statements as treasonable as Casement's. Sullivan had to apologize abjectly and shortly withdrew from the case, leaving Casement to a junior. And next week, the end of Casement's troubles and the beginning of Ireland's.
Said he, I'm Roger Casement. I have come to my native land, and I mean to free my countrymen on the lonely Banner Strand.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, John Beaupre, Rex Wagner, Graham Underhill, and Hugh Young and Barry Empson contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history, music, and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For our associate producer, Lucia Chappelle, and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 4NAG, Yeppoon, Queensland, WZKW, Kingsville, Ohio, KSOW, Cottage Grove, Oregon, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.